Welcome to Align to Lead. I'm Dr. Megan Parks, and today we're talking about real solutions for women's health, healing, and balance. You're watching Now Media Television. Welcome to Align to Lead. I'm Dr. Megan Parks. This is a space where we explore what it means to reconnect with the body, understand what is happening beneath the surface, and lead our lives and families with more confidence and clarity. Today, we are expanding the conversation into the world of children, behavior, learning, and family support. So often when a child is struggling, the first thing people notice is the behavior. They notice the meltdown, the shutdown, the resistance, the delay, the big emotion, or even the classroom challenge. But what if behavior is not the problem? What if behavior is communication? My guest today is Goldine Lowe, Master's in Education, BCBA, LBA, CEO, and Clinical Director of ABA Classroom. For more than 20 years, Goldine has helped children grow with confidence and joy while supporting families along the way. Her work brings together board-certified behavior analysis, counseling, trauma-informed care, and fit learning coaching to create a supportive, results-focused environment where children can thrive and families feel welcomed, understood, and equipped. Goldine, welcome to Align to Lead.
Thank you so much, Megan. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me to Align to Lead today.
Oh, absolutely. It's our pleasure. What first called you into working with children and their families?
Well, you know, when you check off those checklists when you're little of what you want to be when you grow up, I had no idea that I was going to be a specialized teacher or work with children with developmental disabilities. But I think as I grew up, I realized that there is this area, this niche where it takes science and caring to really make a difference in the lives of children and families who are struggling with developmental disabilities. And, you know, when I put this together, I really understood the value of this because it can transform lives. You know, you see the struggle of parents. Parents children with special needs go 24/7 and they have the same cortisol levels as combat soldiers. There's research on that. And so when we help our children learn how to talk, how to communicate needs, how to play, how to follow directions, this cortisol levels really drop and the love and the family increases, the joy, connection. And that's something that it's such a treasure to be a part of.
Oh, I love that. Now you've been in this realm for over 20 years. What do you wish more adults understood about these kids who are struggling in this area?
Well, what I wish, you know, one of the things is that these kids have big internal lives. So even though they might not be able to get into other people's worlds or respond how we are hoping they're going to respond to us, they do have personalities. They do have interests and also feelings. They care about what's happening in the world, and they want to be heard, they want to be listened to and understood in that way. And I do see that shift that happens when parents first get that diagnosis. There's a lot of grief, loss, they feel like they've lost their child in some way. And then gradually, as we work with our kids and they start to develop all the skills needed for functioning in day-to-day life, and the parents start to see all the humor that the children have. They start to see the personalities or how to relate with them in different ways. You know, all their quirks and funny things that they might do or say. And they find joy in that and that it's unique self-expression.
No, I love that. When you say behavior is communication, what do you mean by that?
Well, behavior is communication. So tantrums sometimes might look like hitting, screaming, biting, falling to the ground. We're asking them to go to the bathroom. We might be telling them, no, I'm sorry, you can't play with the TV remote control. and they might have a tantrum about that. And we all have to get used to being told no sometimes. We all need to go to the bathroom sometimes. So, you know, these things that we want to get out of, or we want to get and we're told no, there's that process of learning how to accept that reality that we can't just have everything, and we do have to do things in the world. And so when we see that kind of behavior, the child is, of course, saying no, they don't want it, or want to go to the bathroom, or they, yes, they want to play with that thing and they're told no to. So when we see those big behaviors, we see that upset of like, this is what they want. You know, they might be vying for their parents' attention, the parents on the phone, and they're grabbing for their mom and trying to grab the phone. They're wanting attention at that moment. We look at the functions of behavior. And so we might see escape. We might see getting a tangible. We might see getting attention. Sometimes we also might see stimming behavior. There might be flapping of hands, spinning around, making vocalizations, scripting songs that they might hear. And these are all automatic behaviors. It's like trying to get an activity. You know, some of our, one of our kids might be bored. They might be stressed. So sometimes we might go for a run. We might do yoga when we're stressed. Sometimes they're stimming to get their stress out. So in terms of behaviors, communication, these are the things we might see. They're trying to say no in some way, or trying to request something with behavior, get out stress or boredom, or try to get some attention. Behaviors, communication.
No, I love that. And I love, and honestly, I even feel my own self, where sometimes we get in the mode of reacting. You know, we react at the behavior. How can you help parents and even professionals go more underneath the surface of what they're trying to do, that communication, versus just react on it?
Well, that's a great question. And that is the topic of soldiers, basically. You have to be able to tolerate tantrums. It's not easy, because when they're in that teaching mode for our kids, you know, we have to help them learn how to accept or tolerate being told no to something. Learning how to breathe is one thing, learning how to calm the central nervous system. There's a number of techniques that can be taught around that. You know, so breathing techniques, doing some tapping techniques, et cetera, calming parts of the body, learning how to sit calmly, learning how to wait. And also, you know, tolerating demands. So, you know, when we're asking our kids to say, go to the bathroom, tolerating that demand, making it fun, making it so we might pair some sort of reinforcement with it. We might make the bathroom really fun. It's a cool place to be. So looking at it as a science rather than, you know, being upset or taking it personally. A lot of parents do get depressed. There's a lot of anxiety, both with children with autism, also with parenting children with autism, very stressful. But in terms of staying two steps ahead, so as you're saying, not reacting, but responding in ways that are two steps ahead. That's the game.
That's good. Your background's in counseling and trauma-based care, informed care. How has that shaped the way you treat children or work with children?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, when I first started in the field, I was working as a counselor, and trauma-informed care was my research area. When children have experienced some sort of adverse experience early on in their life, it can look like attention deficit. It can look like fear and avoiding situations. And when we experience this with our kids, we see a lot of avoidance or overreactive responses. We look at how to treat that trauma and look at the bigger picture. As I was mentioning earlier, how to breathe, how to calm the central nervous system. Also how to accept these things, which through desensitization or exposure therapy, so that, say, it's a spider, scared of spiders. Say it's, you know, some kids are afraid of those big Christmas blow-up things that wobble around. And so these are things that we might expose to our dogs even. So we do have a clinic dog who comes in. So for example, one of our kiddos was extremely afraid of dogs, and our clinic dog was like a love bug. So no need to fear. And I'm just going to close my window here for background noise. So our plan was, so when the dog was laying down in the ground, we would first have our little learner go over and just touch its tail and then run away. Like, oh, that was great. You did a great job. And then the next time was going to like touch the middle of the body of the dog. And the dog didn't do anything. So that was also reinforcing, like nothing bad's going to happen. And we were giving lots of praise and access to other things that the child really likes. So using reinforcement systems. And then eventually touch the head, which was the scariest part. And then, you know, within the next couple of days, this kiddo and our classroom dog were best friends. The little kiddo was laying on top of the dog, so excited, wanting to show the parents their love. So desensitization, calming central nervous system, and using reinforcement systems so that the child can overcome their fears. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's such a great idea. Well, Goldine, this has been such an important beginning because it reframes behavior from something to control into something to understand. So when adults become more curious, children often receive more compassion, more structure, and more effective support. So when we come back, we will go deeper into what families need when they are feeling overwhelmed, worried, or trying to advocate for their child who learns differently.
We'll be right back with more practical tools to help you feel healthier, stronger, and more aligned. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Dr. Megan Parks, and this is Align to Lead on Now Media Television.
Welcome back to Align to Lead. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in both English and Spanish. On the move, no problem. Catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and beyond, Now Media is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. I'm back with Goldine Lowe, CEO and Clinical Director of ABA Classroom. In this part of the conversation, we're going to be talking about families. When a child is struggling, parents often carry fear, guilt, confusion, and unfortunately, exhaustion. They may wonder if they are doing enough, if they missed something, or even how to get the right help without feeling judged. Goldine's work centers on helping children thrive, but it also supports the family system around the child, so parents feel more informed, more confident, and less alone. Goldine, what do families often feel by the time they finally reach out for support?
Families are often feeling exhausted. Usually by the time the child has a diagnosis, they might have waited for services, for intervention for maybe years. Maybe they were in a state of denial as well and not wanting to address the situation. So there can be embarrassment, there can be hesitation, and it's hard to see because, you know, when we start this work, it does take, you know, usually 6 months to see a really big steady difference with our children being able to respond, communicate. And then that next 6 months, this is intensive services for children that aren't speaking. So, you know, it takes patience, and families at this point really need to have some sort of positive outcome. So usually when they come in, they're exhausted, they're hopeful, they're trepidatious, this is the right thing. I usually respond with a lot of encouragement, and also letting them know it just takes some time, consistency, time, and persistence. We can do this together.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm all about empowerment. And so how do you help parents go from fear and shame to more of an understanding and an actionable plan?
Yeah, great question. Usually I coach for their internal resources. And, you know, counseling systems are few and far between. So oftentimes our parent coaching sessions are about self-care, finding times to carve out times for themselves where they can recharge their batteries, time for themselves as couples. They can go out together and, you know, getting other family members, extended family members trained or some respite care, making sure that they've got a way to get rid of their stress and to refurbish their energy supply. Then also teaching them how to teach their children at home. And, you know, whether we're teaching a coex or manding or tacting, how to talk, how to listen, imitation skills, all those really basic vocal verbal operants, we transfer that to families so that they can start to teach at home and feel empowered, feel excited, see the difference. And that usually helps to change the tide from fear and shame into inspiration and empowerment to teach.
What does it mean for a family to feel welcomed or even understood, like when we're talking about a clinical setting or even an educational setting?
Oh yeah, very good. That has a lot to do with trauma-informed care that we were talking about earlier. And, you know, so we have a lot of plants outside of our clinic, so it's welcoming. You know, if we're taking care of plants, they're surviving, we can take care of your kids. We have a welcoming environment as well. We have soft music and relaxing video screen happening all the time in our clinic. We have inspirational pictures and photos in our clinic as well. We set up our clinic that we have a breakout room, sensory room for climbing, breaks. We have another room for a little bit more quiet breaks as well. We make sure that all of our kids' needs are taken care of. So food, allergies, bathroom schedule, etc. And, you know, for everyone that walks in, we just want to make sure that they're feeling seen. We say, you know, hello, we smile, we meet them, we ask how the day was, how so far, how is the sleep, how they're doing. We give a report at the end of the day at the session. You know, my husband's a baker, we bring in cookies, you know, these kinds of things really make a difference where families feel welcomed and that they can leave their kids in a trusted location.
That's amazing. How do you help the parents who they've been struggling? They've been run ragged, or again, people have judged them unrightfully. So how do you advocate for them when they're trying to help their kids versus fighting every system out there or making themselves feel alone for fighting for their kid?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. I often offer a lot of listening support. If I see a parent who's struggling, I'll, you know, pull them aside and I'll say, hey, let's touch base. I know sometimes it's hard for families to even talk about grief and loss and struggle. They might just need to sit and cry for a little while when they're, you know, and then talk about how we can support them. So sometimes I'll write letters of support for their decisions. Sometimes I'll refer them or let them know how they can connect with their physicians or pediatricians or other advocates so that they can get other supports in place. I might do some calling for them so that they can connect in with other professionals or lend them books. We've done a lot of that. But oftentimes for me, it's just about unconditional positive regard for them. And just even, you know, and our team, so I have a really amazing team, just meeting these parents, telling them they're doing a great job, reinforcing that everything they're doing thus far has been amazing. We recognize the love that they have for their children and supporting it, the situation like that.
Nice. Now you mentioned that it can take 6 months. It takes 6 months before we start seeing stuff. We'd have another 6 months. How do you help the parents understand progression when a lot of times, let's be honest, it's not going to be linear. It's going to have its ups and then it's going to have its downs.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, actually, I was just attending a state hearing just recently for a family who was denied services from their medical insurance. Mm-hmm. And I had to explain to the moderator that when families have experienced trauma, such as the, you know, COVID even, or the Lahaina fires, that they may not have regular sleep patterns. They might not be able, their immune systems might be hampered. They might be not able to come every week because of, you know, parental struggle with income, et cetera. So, you know, and it's hard for insurance companies to really understand the reality of that when they're not interfacing with families. So it's taken a lot to help understand or help agencies understand and also explain context and encourage families, no matter what, you know, keeping consistent, even through the ups and the downs, we are seeing a change. We're able to look at that in our data as well. And we can still, we can talk about all those positive changes we can see as an encouragement to keep going.
I'm going to kind of pivot a little bit because, I mean, obviously, it's so hard for the kids that are dealing with this, but I always like to also focus on the people taking care of them. And I love that you not only work with the kids, but work with the families. How do parents protect their own emotional well-being while supporting their children that may have these complex needs?
Yeah, very good. You know, some of our families out here in Maui are surfers. So, you know, I see the ups and downs. They might, you know, go through a period of anxiety, depression, upset, process that, reaching out to family, you know, family members talking about it, maybe counselors or other healthcare providers. You know, exercise, walking, getting into activities, talking with friends. We do offer parent support. There are a lot of really cool things out there that, you know, video blogs. Dr. Mary Barbera is also a really great parent trainer. She's got a lot of online parent training, parent herself. She's written a lot of books. So trying to, you know, from all areas, help families when they are experiencing stress to diffuse that and give them the tools to do that.
Nice. How do you help families build realistic expectations while honestly still believing in their child's potential, especially during these times when sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, over the years with COVID and with the fires, I have seen some regression. So we might have started off strong. We see a lot of communication start, and then we see it taper down and then come back up again. So I reflect with families on that, and we do take trips down memory lane and say, you know, here's where we were. And now here we are, you know, 7 years later, they're doing really well in these certain areas. We're getting to know them and their personalities a little bit more. And, you know, I know families who have started services at 19, they've completely missed early intervention. And, you know, there's kids that are talking, they're saying their first words at 19, which is amazing. And, you know, so parents with this process of grief and loss, you know, we want to talk about the realistic outcomes. Yes, they might not be fluent vocal verbal communicators, but they are able to participate in the community. That's why we do a lot of community participation, getting our kids out, doing leisure skills, pre-vocational skills or vocational skills, so that we can launch these kids into their livelihoods. So parents have to do less support down the line. So we talk about that as options. We follow the parent goals as well, because parents usually have the best radar on how to support their kids for the long term.
For those of you listening, this conversation reminds us that children do not grow in isolation. When families are supported, informed, and emotionally grounded, the child is going to receive a strong foundation for growth. When we return, we will talk about learning, confidence, and how results-driven instruction can help children experience success in a new way.
We'll be right back with more practical tools to help you feel healthier, stronger, and more aligned. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Dr. Megan Parks, and this is Align to Lead on Now Media Television.
Welcome back to Align to Lead. I'm continuing my conversation with Goldie Lowe, whose work combines compassionate care with practical results-driven instruction. One of the most powerful things that can happen for a child is discovering that I can do this. That moment changes more than performance. It can change confidence, motivation, and identity. In this segment, we are talking about learning, skill building, and the kind of support that helps children experience progress in ways they can feel. Goldine, before we move on to this topic, one of the questions I would like to ask a little bit more is, what are some common misunderstandings about applied behavior analysis or behavior support?
Great question. Thanks for asking. You know, it was maybe 4 years ago, there was in the media that coverage on someone who had some traumatic experience with applied behavior, their treatment, their ABA therapy. And it was somewhere in the middle states. I'm not quite certain where it was. And it became quite a media following. And it really shifted it, because I think a lot of parents started to hear this message of like, oh, all ABA is traumatic and don't put your child in ABA. And they're just going to be like doing table time or whatever it is. And so, you know, being out here in the middle of the Pacific Ocean on Maui, we're kind of far away from a lot of that media, but, you know, still it has impacted families here who are connected on social media. And so the big message I'd like to share about that in terms of dispelling that, that experience was like, we want to honor that specific experience for that person was what it was. And it was a misapplication, or, you know, the person that was running that program wasn't paying attention to how the learner was responding or was applying. Kind of like, you know, they weren't using all their tools and they weren't watching how what they were teaching was affecting the learner, or they were applying it with maladaptive application. But, you know, in the bigger picture, this is science. So it's really on how it's applied, just like how someone using any kind of tools, or a surgeon or mechanic, how you use the tools, your approach to using the tools, and how you create that change is really the science behind it. So we look at the approach. And that's why in the clinic, we have a lot of trauma-informed care, where we're creating positive environment, not only for the kids and the families, but for our staff. You know, we create a really positive place for people to come into. And, you know, we might have to ride through some tantrums, but we don't, you know, we don't go past a place where a child is feeling like they're not supported in some way. You know, we might have to ride through a tantrum because they were told no, but we're going to reassure them and give them lots of positive experiences after they've accepted or tolerated being told no. I hope that's helpful. Thanks for the question.
No, that is. That is. Thank you so much for clarifying that before we went on. I guess my next one is just kind of going into the kids. How does confidence change when a child basically starts experiencing progress?
That is such a joy to watch. And some of our learners have come to mind. I'm thinking of, we teach swimming on Wednesdays. It's a safety skill because we're surrounded by water here in Maui. A lot of our kids love water. Okay, that's part of the autism. They love water, but they don't know how to swim. So some of our kids have been like scared of putting their face in the water. They just don't even want to go in the water. So that experience of where they put their face in the water, they've used a kickboard, and they're, you know, now they're swimming laps. You know, they're so joyful and they're so you know, enthused. It is such an empowering moment in their lives because they're now able to do things they weren't able to do before, and they're loving it. When a child learns how to say the first words, we call that behavior cusp, and they see the power of using their voice or even hearing their voice. Sometimes we use megaphones in the clinic because some of our kids, when they start talking, talk really softly and we can't hear them. They're maybe afraid of hearing themselves. So we emphasize that once they get to know their voice, then they start to speak more. It's reinforcing for them. They're able to say no, which is not usually the parent's favorite first word. But, you know, getting them to be confident is such a cool experience to watch. When they're excited to learn, it's reinforcing for them.
That would be a joy just to see them, especially experiencing that for the first time. Can you describe, you mentioned that one of your techniques that you do is fit learning approach. How does that complement what you're doing with ABA Classroom?
Yeah, great question. Thank you. So Fit Learning is actually a model that's come out of Reno, Nevada, the University of Reno, Nevada. And that was about a decade and a half ago. And it is precision teaching applied to academics. So it's fast-paced tutoring. And in our medical treatment, we don't usually use any academic approaches. We're teaching all communication skills, functional skills, leisure skills, social skills. But academics, we usually leave for the schools. However, I've found a need where there's kids that are falling through the cracks. They're not getting, they're not learning how to sound out words or read. They're not able to functionally use count money. So what we've started to do in our clinic is introduce this FIT learning model. We've become an affiliate a couple of years ago, and we have a lot of our medical treatment learners that are we're participating in as scholarship. We give scholarships to them so that they can learn and comprehend at least to a grade three level, which will help them with their overall learning skills as they become older. They'll be able to make a conditional discrimination. What's you know, what's a correct thing to do or what's an incorrect thing to do? How do I read about that? How to count money, et cetera, or how to make a logical discrimination of, you know, that person's trying to trick me, or I can trust that information. So FIT Learning is very fast paced. We talk really fast. We take data. We analyze the data as, you know, are these learners getting all the basic skills? Can we go up to the next level? We do slice packs so that we, you know, if they're mixing up their B's and D's or P's and Q's, we get that. If they're not able to, you know, count forwards or by ones or twos or fives, we go back and do that because that's really important in any kind of math application. So FIT Learning is a nice complement in the clinic because we can make sure that we've got all the tools necessary. We just, you know, in terms of the person power to do it all for all of our kids, but we do have all the tools necessary to address any gaps in a learner's repertoire.
Nice. For certain kids, how is high intensity targeted instruction helpful for them?
Oh, yeah, it's very helpful, especially for kids that are non-speakers. And we usually, under six, we aim for early intensive. So that could be 25 or more hours a week. We usually have them at least 5 hours a day if they're not speaking. And we create really fun working environments for them. So say our little ones want to run around, we might do natural environment training where they're running around and then we pause and we have some other favorite things and we get them to do some fine motor, oral motor, echoic sounds. And then we say, okay, go play. You run around and then we stop them again, say, okay, do this. And then we do ask for five simple responses and then get them to run around. So that's reinforcement. So we embed it in a teaching environment. We then start to, you know, get our kids learning how to learn, participatory and observational learning, how to be a competent learner so that they can launch into school with more skills so they can be in general education programming rather than special ed or, you know, separated classrooms. They have more opportunities to access education. So that high intensity targeted instruction, especially for language, is really key. Imitation is really key because we all imitate. That's how we learn. You know, if you think about your learning as a student yourself, you can think, okay, I'm going to follow the student. They look like they know what they're doing, or I'm going to follow the model, the teacher. They know what they're doing, or I'm going to follow this information here. And it's all imitation. Our kids have a hard time. Their mirror neurons are somewhat impacted. So we do need to teach that imitation skill. And that's why the intensity is so important, especially under six.
Now, with these kids who are, you know, not verbal, how do people basically, or I guess I should say, what are some of the signs that the kid's not being defiant, but they're actually just really, truly overwhelmed or missing some kind of foundational skill?
Yeah, great question. You know, and there is that where kids, some of our kids are, you know, very good at defying or good at escaping. And oftentimes they'll get a diagnosis of oppositional defiant disorder, ODD, or, you know, we look at it as just very good at escaping requests. And they might be also really good at arguing. You know, they've started to argue and then You know, parents might, as we talked about earlier, react rather than respond. They might argue back. And so they've gotten really good at arguing with adults. And so then, you know, we go, you know, going back to staying two steps ahead and creating a really fun learning environment. We have a classroom store that I keep well stocked. We've got Amazon cards, we've got Starbucks cards, we've got all the little plushy stuffies, we've got Hot Wheels cars, we've got anything you can imagine for kids, stickers, t-shirts, hats, balloons, Kinder surprises, all the, you know, healthy candies as much as we can. But they can buy stuff, they can earn stuff. We usually have active reinforcers as well in their programming. So they're, in terms of helping them to get those foundational skills, as you were asking about, you know, we work on the overwhelm, we work on a lot of calming strategies so that they can attend. We teach the participatory learning, calm body, way learning to wait, but we do use a lot of reinforcement to motivate them to learn those hard skills.
No, that's great. I love that you have so many different things that can reach out to so many of those kids in a different way. And honestly, what stands out here is that learning isn't only about academics or some behavioral chart. It's about helping the kids build that internal belief and that they're capable, they're supported, and they're worthy of being understood. When we come back, we will close with leadership, legacy, and what it means to build systems where every child has the opportunity to thrive.
We'll be right back with more practical tools to help you feel healthier, stronger, and more aligned. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Dr. Megan Parks, and this is Align to Lead on Now Media Television.
Welcome back to Align to Lead. Stay connected with this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock non-stop bilingual programming in both English and Spanish. On the move, not a problem. Catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. I'm here with Goldie Lowe, CEO and Clinical Director of ABA Classroom. In this final part of the conversation, I want to bring everything back to leadership and legacy. When you create a space for children and families, you are not just offering services. You are shaping how those families experience hope, support, education, and trust. For Goldie, the mission is clear. Every child deserves the opportunity to thrive, and every family deserves to feel welcomed and understood. Goldie, I know we've talked a lot about the families, about the kids, but how do you build a team culture that reflects both clinical excellence and deep compassion?
Great question. When I first started in the field, I worked in an amazing clinic, and you know, it was collegial, lots of incredible teamwork. No one was left behind, and I've wanted to recreate that. And so, when I started ABA Classroom 5 years ago, I had been working in the field for 15 years at that time, and I knew that I wanted to build a culture that I would love to go to every day because the work is so demanding and you need to be on all the time with these kids for direct instruction. And so I create, in terms of the environment, we have like aromatherapy, we've got the soft music, we've got a welcoming environment, it's comfortable. There's, places for the staff to put their things, kitchen. We always have like well-stocked staff supplies in there for drinks and snacks. And I mentioned before, my husband's a baker. I bring in some cookies. And also we do team meetings. We do team appreciations. Actually, this Saturday, we're going out on our biannual snorkeling trip. And I do also team bonuses just so that we have some. And also the other thing is taking 3-day weekends once a month, so they have time for their families just to rest and recoup. Our kids do sneeze a lot. So our immune systems have a workout all the time. So, just to have that kind of thoughtfulness of health and well-being and also listening to each other on how it is. So we do a lot of reflective responding in terms of clinical work, how they're doing, other supports. We communicate a lot as a team.
Such an important reminder, because we're no good to anybody else if we're not good for ourselves. So I do. I love that you've created that space. I'm going to be a little bit curious. What does leadership mean to you in the context of serving these families and these kids?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, in 80-hour work weeks, you know, I want to make sure that I'm doing the best that I can. It's a high bar. And, you know, I may not be able to keep up with my word every single day. I might have a long list of to-dos, but I do, at the end of the day, make sure that everybody's communicated with, everyone feels heard. I'm creating that space, the container for which transformation can occur for our kids in our community. I think that's why I attract such great team members. It's because we get a lot of team members that are really interested in the community here. They call it the Ohana, the family. You know, this side of the island has gone through a lot of trauma with the fires and with the high cost of living. And so when I get team members on that are really caring about the kids' development, you know, that says a lot. So in terms of, you know, keeping this going, my goal is to live they call it here kuleana, you know, sometimes people call it a dharma, or, you know, your purpose in life. That's what I try to do, is like keep my balance. I have a lot of self-care in my week myself, so that I can keep myself balanced as I lead this group forward.
That's awesome. So I'm a provider. How, when we're talking to the providers, how can we better listen to the parents and the caregivers without making them feel judged? Because obviously that's the last thing they need, and that's the last thing we want to do to them.
Yeah, great question. I always come at them with a lot of empathy. You know, I smile a lot. Those are two great things, hand in hand. You know, how are you doing? I ask about their self-care. I don't necessarily put a lot of pressure on them either to, you know, did you run that trial, or how's the potty training going, or, you know, how's the toothbrushing going? I don't usually ask for data from them on how parent programming is going at home as my first conversation with them. I might say, you know, did you get some self-care? Did you get out for dinner with your spouse? You know, and I usually just offer a listening ear rather than a question about programming right off the bat. I might also have their child smile at them. I might prompt, you know, if the child's not yet smiling, I might run a trial to get them smiling, or say, you know, having a wave. Sometimes our kids are waving like this, so I might get them to wave like, you know, something like this upon, or say, I love you. These kinds of things that are helpful for a parent who is going 24/7 with high cortisol levels, just to see a little bit of grace upon greetings and departures.
No, that is so good. What changes would you love to see between how schools, families, and even their clinical teams work together?
Oh yeah, great question. You know, I had a conversation with a school principal the other day. We did some tree planting as an agency. We helped sponsor tree planting after the fires as a response to green and keep the west side cool. You know, he was explaining their challenges of staffing, and it's, you know, the high cost of living here on the west side, especially. It's so beautiful. It's expensive to live here. You know, it's just empathy, and also, you know, how can we work together and support each other? That is a big conversation. When I first started in the field, I worked with speech and language pathologists, occupational therapists, physiotherapists. So any opportunity that I can, I encourage families to, you know, connect in. We refer. You know, I try to build those good relationships with our schools as well, the principals and the school teams, giving them a lot of respect and dignity, and because everyone's doing the best that they can. You know, we always make sure that, you know, we're offering support, high level support, and that, you know, we're here for the organizations that are working alongside us in the community.
That's definitely an important reminder, because I know some of these parents feel like they're just running on ragged, or are they doing the best that they can? So what do you say to those parents who are watching, who are feeling overwhelmed, or they're truly unsure where to even start? What do you tell them? Where do you tell them to begin?
Yeah, great. You know, if they haven't gotten a diagnosis, sometimes it's, you know, you wanna talk with your medical provider and say, I think this is what's happening. I do need some help. That's a first step. And then doing the research, finding out, talking with other parents, going online, seeing good areas of support, creating support networks. There are some support groups online. I would actually check out Dr. Mary Barbera, all of her video blogs, and then her training, online training for parents. She's got a long history. She's an author of 2 books. I refer a lot of my parents to her video blogs as well, because she teaches some really cool skills. And you can hear other parents talk in a positive way. You want to surround yourself with positive environment. And then also your own self-care. You want to make sure that you're talking with your spouse about these things. Parents have a lot of challenges with supporting each other as well. So you want to make sure that everything that you're doing is, you know, is paced, you're getting enough sleep, you're giving yourself grace. If you have to be late for school one day, dropping them off, that's okay. If you're late, just thinking about communication, thinking about the bigger picture, and also surround yourself with really powerful inspirations like online resources, audiobooks, podcasts like this. You can Google parent support for ASD. That will give you a lot of resources as well. And give yourself some time, give yourself some grace. That's what I would say.
Awesome. If viewers could take away one message from this conversation, what would you want it to be?
I would say, you know, don't wait to start intervention. Time is precious, and you want to take it at a pace that is as quick as you can make it, but you do want to start early and take it in stride, so that you know this is not a sprint, it's a marathon. We want to think about the long-term legacy, where you're creating positive outcomes for your child. Celebrate all the successes and build a strong network around yourself of positive supports. Maybe it's your church, maybe it is some other parent groups, maybe it's all online, maybe it's with your healthcare providers, but just start reaching out and find what's positive and what's supportive for you to help your child start to learn.
Goldine, I know I've enjoyed this, but for viewers out there who want to learn a lot more about ABA Classroom, how to connect with your team, or even explore ways to support their family, where should they go?
Yeah, well, you can check out our website. We do have a lot of links for parent support, and we do link to other support in applied behavior analysis. So that's a good starting point, is abaclassroom.org online. And I do have some video blogs as well, talking about certain topics, parent self-care, all of the different things you might want to think about for intervention. And also, as I mentioned earlier, there's a couple of books that are really important. The Approach by Dr. Mary Barbera, and Turning Autism Around by Dr. Mary Barbera as well.
That is amazing. Goldine, thank you so much for bringing your heart and expertise and leadership to this conversation. Today we explore behavior. Absolutely. Today we explored behavior as communication, family support, trauma-informed care, learning, confidence, and the power of creating environments where children and family feel understood. What I'm taking away from this is, when we stop asking what is wrong and start asking what is my child trying to communicate, we create room for understanding, growth, and healing. To everyone watching, especially parents and caregivers, ask yourself, where might my child be asking to be understood before being corrected? I'm Dr. Megan Parks, and this is Aligned to Lead.